up, everybody? This is your host, SB Sanchez, and we are back for another episode. And before I introduce the special person that we will be getting immensely entangled with today, I have a homework assignment for everyone. I want you to stop and really take a second to think about one positive thing that has happened today. And I promise there's a purpose to this. And I'm actually going to go first. I would say that something positive that has happened for me today is I got the opportunity to talk to one of my siblings. And I live really far away from home and we're very busy and we're all getting to that age where we're all adults. So sometimes being able to hop on a FaceTime is not as easy as I wish it was. And today I got to do so and just kind of hear about some of the things that she's had going on. And some of the craziness that has been happening in her world up in Washington. And that just really made my day. That really brought positivity to my life and even just to that simple moment when it occurred. So, like I said, it's really easy to get caught up in like all the negative things that surround our days, day in and day out. But it's really important to make sure to pause and reflect and allow space for positivity. Because if you're just negative, 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 then usually the result is probably going to be pretty negative, or at least it's going to feel negative. But if you allow for a little bit of positivity, that can make a huge difference, even if it's just a small difference in the day that you're having. And the reason that I wanted us to take a step back and reflect is because our topic today is actually positivity. And there is no better person to have this conversation with than Jan Jones. And you guys will definitely see why in just a second. Whenever I talk to Jan, I feel like I'm receiving this huge dose of just positivity. I have never left a conversation with her without feeling like just so much joy. And sometimes I don't even know how we got there, but it's always just filled with joy the moments that I'm able to share with her. This amount of positivity is really rare to find and very difficult to maintain. And so I brought her on because I need to know her secrets. And with that being said, Jan, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I am so good. And I'm even better now. There's my positive thing that happened today. That was such an incredible introduction. Thank you. I'm already tearing up. With my positivity comes a lot of emotion.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
But yeah, that really meant a lot. Thank you.
Of course. And yeah, I couldn't think of a better person for this. So with that being said, though, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about what you do and who you are and just let us get to know you a little bit.
Well, I'm Jan Jones, as you said, and I am an organizational development consultant and keynote speaker. So I love people. I'm very passionate about people. I love to see like light bulbs go off in others and let them really realize their potential. I just feed off of that. So I feel like God really did lead me into the perfect career for what I'm passionate about.
Of course.
And you know, I'm a wife, I'm a daughter, I'm a friend, I have all these roles. So I really do, I do love life.
Yeah, I love that. And like I said, that's rare for us to find nowadays. And I mean, you know, life does come with a lot of ups and downs, a lot of rough patches, but being able to maintain a positive outlook, like that's something that I think we should all strive to do, no matter how difficult our life may be, whether it's in that moment or whatever is to come ahead in the future as well. So I do have to ask you the original question, the question everyone has to answer when they come on. If I asked you to define mental health, how would you do so?
Yeah, I love that question. And you know, when I think about mental health as a non-clinician, just in my lay terms, I think of really kind of three things. I think of perspective, and then I think of clarity and contribution. And what I mean by that is mental health is really having, I think, a positive but correct perspective.
Ooh, okay.
You know, not like wearing negative labels, watching your negative self-talk. And I'm sure we'll get into some of that a little bit deeper. So it's just all about making sure your perspective is really correct. And clarity and contribution come to my mind because I think mental health has a lot to do with engagement in life. And doing what I do, I know that organizations have higher engagement scores by their employees when their employees know exactly what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So they have that clarity and they're not trying to hit a moving target. Things aren't chaotic and confusing. They have a real clear direction. And so I think we need a vision and kind of purpose in our life. And I think that really does come from finding our passion. But contribution is where that real engagement for me and my mental health comes from, because I personally want to make the greatest contribution I can for the time that I'm given. Mm-hmm. And I think when people are contributing, it's just a really healthy way to look at life and really like building your legacy now, mm-hmm. you know, for when we are gone. Like, what are people going to say about you at your 80th birthday party? Because we're building this legacy throughout our life, and it really is about our approach to life. So I know that was kind of a long answer, but that's really okay. What comes to mind when I think about mental health, mm-hmm. is that perspective and that clarity and that contribution.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to use that in the future, in my future presentations, clarity and contribution.
Good, there you go.
And the reason why I like it from somebody who practices within this field is because a lot of times people can't clarify emotions that they're feeling, or they can't clarify how they feel about something that's happened, or why they're having certain symptoms. They can't clarify that. Yeah. So then in turn, they can't contribute to attempting to increase their mental health, right? Or make it better in whatever way is possible. Yeah. So I think those two go neck and neck, because you're right. I don't think that you can contribute to something if you aren't relatively clear on what it is that's happening in the first place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a great definition. So,
oh, thanks. I feel really special you said that, since you are a clinical person.
No, that was good. Like I said, I'm probably going to use that in the future. But going back to what you do for work, give me a little bit of a rundown of what a day in your career looks like.
Yeah, so I have my own business. And it's called JJ Motivations for Jan Jones. And what I do is I work with clients around the country, and I really work with teams. I work with leaders. I facilitate workshops. I carry with me many certifications that I have acquired through the years in my career. Certifications like Crucial Learning and Crucial Conversations, Emotional Intelligence through Talent Smart. I'm a Gallup Certified Strengths Coach. Mm-hmm. So, Franklin Covey is another one of my certifications, and there's a lot of courses within that organization that I'm certified to teach. So I really try to improve engagement, improve productivity, but again, that joy I find from people tapping into their own potential so that they can contribute. So that's a, I guess, an elevator speech version of what I do.
Yeah, and that's something, I mean, I can imagine that is very powerful in a lot of spaces. You've mentioned passion before, like finding your passion.
Yeah.
I have found that a lot of people in my age category mm-hmm. are doing things that they don't actually care about.
Yeah.
And in turn, they're not motivated to do it. They literally struggle every single day to get up and go to work, whatever that may look like.
Right.
And they live for the weekend, you know? And it's one of those things where I wish there was more people who were able to come out of like early adulthood, or even come out of high school, and be aware of like, okay, maybe I don't know for sure this is what I want to do forever, but I have an idea of what I want my work to represent in correlation to like the person that I am.
Yeah.
Right. So I can imagine that that is work that is super beneficial for a lot of organizations. Is there an organization that you've enjoyed working with that you've had like for a long duration of time? Or is this like a case where you go in, you work with the organization, this for a small period of time, and then just move on?
So I have both scenarios. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they are just short relationships with someone, but it's interesting. I may do a keynote speak for a conference within an organization, or I may work for a few months on a specific team for a while, and then that project ends. But it's a great relationship because maybe like a year or two later, they call me again and they're like, oh, hey, we've got another opportunity that we'd like to bring you in for. But then I have some clients that have really been with me the entire time I've been in business. And I work with them regularly. I mean, like almost every week, but multiple times a month. And so those are just incredible because you just become part of that organization's family.
Yeah,
even though you're an outside consultant, you're still like part of the group. So I love any scenario where someone is really utilizing my skills because that's part of my contribution.
Yeah.
And so whether it is a short relationship or a long-term relationship, you know, I want to make sure that people walk away with what they need from me in that moment.
Yeah. I love that. Now, I don't know if you can legally answer this question for multiple reasons, but
you're asking me illegal questions? No, I'm just kidding.
I might. I'm not sure yet. So when it comes to the cases that you've had in the past or maybe even cases that you have now, I don't know if you're allowed to give us any details, maybe if you don't name drop, but what is a case that you've had where it's been like a little bit more challenging, maybe a little bit more difficult than others that you've had in the past?
Yeah, that's actually a tough question to answer because like none of the situations are easy. That's typically why they're like looking for maybe an outside perspective. It's not that they aren't equipped internally, but you know, sometimes it's really good to get a fresh perspective or to have fresh eyes on a challenge.
Well, if you're looking at the same thing every day, and by looking, I mean that metaphorically, but if you're so involved with your business every single day, it's going to be difficult to understand maybe some of the things that, I mean, you're going to miss things because it's human nature. You can't be unbiased all the time.
Yeah. So you're right. And so, you know, in your field, I mean, people are complicated.
Very.
You know, work and leadership is really about getting things done through other people. Well, everybody brings their stuff and their, you know, their personal challenges and their, you know, personal stressors. And then you add that to professional stressors and you've got some really complicated dynamics.
You've got the perfect pot for chaos.
Yeah. Sometimes that perfect storm. So, I mean, I have covered things from team dynamics and where, I mean, it's interesting. It's work can be like an episode of Survivor sometimes, like alliances form and, you know, people often forget they are on the same team.
Yeah.
And so you work on team dynamics, you know, valuing other perspectives. That is something I talk and coach on a lot. Strengths, obviously, like how to tap into your team, how to tap into yourself, how to offer up your talents and strengths, because I tell people all the time, the world needs what you have to offer. So don't hide it. Don't water it down. And, you know, communication is the foundation to really all success and all relationships. So that is a topic I speak on a lot, have different certifications in that. I recently was working with a group of leaders just on how to better delegate so that you can empower your team. Because believe it or not, it's difficult sometimes for a leader to let go of certain tasks and responsibilities But like I just said, leadership is about doing things through other people. So you've got to extend that trust and offer resources and training so that your people feel empowered, so that they're motivated to contribute, and you can do what leaders need to do, right? And that's planning, and that's strategic thinking, and that is retention and all that. So yeah. Lots of different topics and challenges that I get approached to address. And it's really exciting to me because I like to hear all the different challenges so that we can brainstorm together, you know, what are different best practices, what would work here, what wouldn't work there, you know, how can we like build trust with one another so that we're not like hanging on to all the responsibility ourselves and trying to solve it all alone. I mean, that's what teams are for.
Yeah.
I say this a lot. The reason a team is well-rounded is because each of its players is not.
Yeah.
And so we got to learn how to appreciate everybody's strength. Yeah. So, yeah.
I really like that. It's easy for me to relate to because I've been an athlete my whole life. And that's exactly what being part of a team feels like. Even if I am wearing the captain's band and I'm looked at as like the leader of the team, I still wouldn't be able to win a game by myself.
Yeah.
And I have to be able to understand some of the challenges that maybe I'm going through that could affect my team. Mm-hmm. But I also have to take a step back and try to understand the challenges that we're having as a team. That includes like, okay, my teammate, Sarah might be just had gone through a breakup, right? Mm-hmm. And so I have to understand that she's not going to be in the best headspace going into a game maybe in the future.
Yeah.
So I can really relate to that as far as like the team aspect of it.
Yeah.
I actually just read a book, and if you haven't read it, I think you would enjoy it. It's called One Face.
Oh.
It's by Sarah. I just looked it up because I couldn't remember her last name. Sarah McDougal, I think. And if I'm saying that wrong, I am so sorry, Sarah, if you ever listen to this. But it really touches on the idea of a leader, the boss of a business, mm-hmm. right? The business owner. They have to ensure that they have a set of values.
Oh, yeah.
Core values that the business makes very clear that they are connected to.
Yeah.
No matter what we do, we're going to use these values. We're going to do it through these values.
Yeah.
But one of the things that you mentioned is I think a lot of business owners, leaders out in the world forget that that's why it's called one face. If they wear two faces, mm-hmm. if they're one person for their business and another person outside of the business, now you're going to get into a lot of things that can cause tension because you're asking your employees to be following XYZ values, but then you're not doing it. Right on your free time, and you're the image of this business, I could see how a lot of turmoil could come from that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is another topic that I do speak on and teach on is leadership values. You know, organizations usually have a mission statement and they have core values.
Yeah.
And those core values within a company really should just be like your minimum. That's just the bare minimum.
The standard.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, we should be striving for those deeper values that are personal to us.
Yeah.
I always put it to people like this, and especially like, I love that book. I'm going to go get it, because you're right. People act very different in different scenarios. Mm-hmm. And you can say all day long, one of my core values is honesty. But then you turn around and you lie, or you're not consistent, or you don't treat everyone fairly.
Exactly.
And that's not an honest person. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people this, look at it, think of it like this. If someone who did not know you was going to describe you strictly by observation, what would they say about you?
That's a great marketing tip, because that's true. Yeah,
because, you know, people notice what's important to you and the values within you by your behaviors and by your language and by your treatment of others. And so if you're sitting there saying family is so important to me and you have like no relationship with them,
right.
then it's like, well, really? Is that one of your values? So
yeah,
values is just so important when you're talking about life and leadership.
Yeah. And there is a connection that I find between values and negativity. Mm. The connection that I find there is negative things are going to happen.
Yeah.
Life is messy. That's just how it goes. Owning a business is messy. That's just how it goes.
Yeah.
The question is, when those negative moments arise, can you still stay connected to those values that you have in place in order to enhance positivity in some way or form, right? Like you just said, honesty, if that is one of my values. Let's say I got a complaint from a customer. Mm-hmm. Let's say I make clothes, for example, right? And I just put out a product and I started realizing that I'm getting a handful of customer complaints where it's like, the seam on the shirt in this location seems to continue to come apart.
Yeah.
That's not very convenient if you're wearing a shirt and it just starts falling apart.
No,
right?
You don't want your clothes to just fall apart.
Correct, right? So
they wouldn't want to see all this.
Exactly. So let's say I'm receiving a lot of complaints of that nature.
Yeah.
As a business owner, I have two options. One is to go out, apologize, and admit to the audience, hey, if you bought this shirt, I just want to let you know that we've been getting a lot of complaints. We're trying to fix it as quick as we can. Please send back the product and we will send you a brand new updated version.
Yeah.
That is sticking to the value of honesty.
Yeah.
Or I can realize that even though I'm getting all these complaints, I'm still making a lot of money off this product, right? But if I said my value was honesty. I didn't say that my value was being rich off of selling something that's damaged, right? And so I think that's what I see a lot. Right. And then like, if you choose to not stick to that value, usually something else negative comes from that. And then then the negatives build up. Now you've established a culture of negativity because all of these bad things are happening.
Covering up. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, then you don't even have a culture of accountability.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's where I see the connection. It's like, even when bad things happen, Can I stick to those values to help me kind of get out of it?
Yeah.
And to help us have a structure for how to deal with all the things that come with bad things or negative things when they do occur.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. If you aren't grounded and really know who you are and who you want to be, you know, no matter what the circumstances are, then you will, like, you'll blow with the wind. You'll bend here, you'll compromise there, you'll take shortcuts here. And eventually, that credibility that you may have started out with, it will diminish, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you're right. There's such a connection between values and negativity and reputation and credibility and all of that.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I do want to get a little bit more focused on just your life story. But before we do that, one more question about kind of what you do. So, we've made the correlation between, like, being able to instill positivity within like a work environment and that having a direct correlation to productivity levels.
Right.
We've established that is a thing.
Yeah.
So if you had to just sum it up, because obviously you do work for organizations that struggle with this, what are like the top three things that you try to get going within an organization in order to make that transition from like, oh, we struggle with positivity and people being able to stay motivated to work towards transitioning more towards like, okay, we have a culture of positivity and now we're able to be more productive.
Yeah.
What are the top three things?
Man, you're putting me on the spot.
Yes,
only
I am.
Three, right? Well,
I didn't include this in your script.
No, I'm going to give, one like big kind of bucket.
Okay.
For one of them.
Okay.
But like you have to have good leadership. And working with the leaders, having leaders that actually want to grow as leaders, you know, creating a culture where growth and development is encouraged and celebrated. This is something that leaders really need to understand and live. I think recognition of your people is really important. They want to know that they are valued. I mean, anybody wants to know they're valued. People want to know that you see them and you appreciate them. And, you know, there's all kinds of different leadership mindsets out there. Some people think, well, I pay them to do a job, they should show up and do it, right?
Right.
And that is a fact. We do pay people to show up and do a job, but we're definitely in a time where feelings do matter. There's a connection between how people feel and how they perform.
Oh, yeah.
And I think leaders definitely need to grow into that and understand that. And small recognitions make the biggest difference in the world. But another really big thing that I really try to instill in organizations, in team members, in leaders, in all of it, is don't forget the purpose behind this organization. Now, whether you are someone that keeps the grounds beautiful around the building, or whether you are the CEO, whether you are someone that comes in and works on, you know, the sanitation of the place, whether you are customer service. I mean, look, it takes every single person to make an organization run. And we need to stay connected to that purpose, because sometimes people think, oh, well, you know, cutting the grass or, you know, edging the lawn of this building,
that couldn't possibly affect.
That's not impacting their end result. Well, yeah, it really is. Because what if it was all grown up? What if there were snakes in the grass as people were walking into the building? Yeah. What if customers were tripping over grounds that weren't kept up? And that's just one little example. But connecting to purpose really is a big part of staying motivated on those days where work didn't go well, where customers were angry, where maybe you didn't hit a deadline, or, you know, maybe you got reprimanded, maybe someone left you out when they were going to lunch and they didn't invite you. I mean, so many things can happen in one day, but what's the purpose behind your work? And, you know, stay connected to that. Yeah. Because you mentioned earlier, there are a lot of people that don't really love what they do. They dread going to work. I would encourage those people, really stop and think about that company. Something inside of you initiated an application on your part. You're like, I could work there.
Yeah.
And even if it's not for 40 years, you know, can we enjoy where we are while we're on our way to where we're going? And that makes all the difference in your day. No one wants to get up dreading going to work or seeing people. And so it does take a really hefty paradigm shift sometimes. And I know I kind of got off on like, what are three things? But I think leadership, I think connecting to purpose, and, you know, really recognition of your people. I think those are some good starting points. There's so much
I'll have everybody send you an invoice after this for just giving us free advice. No, but
that's wonderful.
But seriously, I think everything that you listed is really important. You know, you mentioned like all the small pieces making up this big thing. And like, I think an organization should be viewed in like with similarities to a vehicle that runs every day, right? Because it's like, you can have a vehicle, but if you have no tires on the vehicle, it is done for, right? Even if you're missing one tire, you're not going anywhere, right? So it's like recognizing, being able to take a step back and reflect on like, okay, all of these pieces do mean something. So if I slack and I let one little piece not function the way I need it to, it could in turn trickle down and have a bigger negative effect than if I just recognized it, went in right away, and then did what I could to try to come up with some way to fix even that small component, even if it is just cutting the grass down another 2 inches.
I've got to share an example of someone that just lives this out. So we're probably about to get into a little bit of my story, and it's very, very much deeply rooted in healthcare. So there have been periods in my life where I literally could not walk, and I would have to show up at the hospital every single day for 5 solid months at 6 a.m. And couldn't walk, couldn't dress myself. Like, there's just a lot of recovery in this season of my life. And there is a gentleman that was there every single morning at 6 a.m. And he was a greeter of this hospital. He was a greeter. And I'm telling you, I could tear up thinking about him right now. His name is Anthony. And if he's listening, he knows exactly who he is. But this man loves people, loves his job, loves this hospital, and gets to know everybody on such a personal level, and takes this job to heart, and would greet me and my mom every single morning. I wasn't married at the time, and would have that wheelchair ready. I mean, like, we have each other's cell phone now. This has been 13 years ago.
Right.
But he is just someone I admire deeply. And it is his approach to work and knowing he serves a part in a massive healthcare system.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because there is not, I mean, I referred to it in the introduction, there is not enough positivity, period, today. The amount of times that we, excuse my language, half-ass our way through being positive towards somebody,
yeah,
right? Because it's so easy to fake it.
It is.
And to not mean it when we say it. And when you find those very few people that mean it, and you receive positivity, true, genuine positivity for the first yeah. time, you are like, oh my God, I'm never going to forget that.
No.
Like, you don't.
You
don't.
And
people don't realize, like, that is such a small moment. But if that small moment occurs consistently on yeah. top of that, you know, those, that's a really big piece.
It's huge. I have story after story after story of yeah. people like that in my healthcare journey. You know, I mean, it's so true
yeah.
that these acts of kindness and that positivity that people are, you know, they're pouring into you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is one of my favorite quotes, and I don't know who said it, maybe Maya Angelou, but, you know, people may forget exactly what you did. They may forget your name,
mm-hmm.
but they will always remember how you made them feel.
Yes, 100%. That is something that people my age have a hard time understanding. They don't understand sometimes that those small moments are actually a lot bigger when you look at the whole picture.
Absolutely.
Right? And, you know, they go day in and day out again, like, kind of faking their way through yeah. it. And in turn, it gets to a point where it's like, they're looking back and they're like, okay. And they reach a point in their life where they really need something, mm-hmm. for example. And then they pull up their phone, they're going through their contacts list, and they're like, what? There's nobody there.
Yeah.
There's nobody there that I insured I kept in my network.
Yeah.
Right. It's that intentionality piece as well,
mm-hmm.
because one of the things that you just said is like, they may not remember your name. They may not remember,
exactly,
you know, what you do, but they're going to remember how you made them feel.
Yeah.
One thing that I was taught at a pretty young age was to, as much as I can, always refer to somebody by their name.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, I'm not the best at it sometimes.
Oh yeah. Me neither.
But when somebody realizes that you remembered their name, for example, I just started some contract works where I go into some schools and I provide therapy for some kiddos.
Yeah.
And these are schools that are in environments that are not always the safest. You know, there's, yeah. it's definitely a low poverty area. And you know, when I first go into high school, I wouldn't say that you are automatically received with open arms. They're like, yeah. who are you?
You're not completely welcome.
Why
right?
do you need to see these kids? Like, they're, you know, they're asking for identification, as they should.
Yeah.
As they should.
Oh, yeah.
But then I make sure by the, if I, you know, the first trip is not going to be super smooth.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee that by the time I make that second trip, I'm going to know the front desk lady's name.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to know at least one person that I spoke to. Because sometimes you go in and they're like, oh, go talk to that person. And you talk to 10 people and you're okay. like, I didn't even have time to ask anybody's name.
Exactly.
But I've realized, even going back a second time to a school that I've only been to one time before, being able to be like, good morning, Mrs. Adams.
Mm-hmm.
That is like, completely changes the dynamic of the conversation that then comes after that interaction.
Yeah.
And I just wish more people were aware of that.
Yeah.
And maybe people are aware of it. They just don't go out of their way, I guess, to put value towards it.
Yeah.
But I do think it's something that we need to do more of.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of my favorite books, it's a simple book, but it is so powerful. They are simple strategies in this book, and it's called How Full Is Your Bucket?
Oh, I've read it.
You know it? By Don Clifton, Dr. Donald Clifton. And that's one of the strategies, is call people by the name they prefer,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
100%. Yeah. You fill someone's bucket that way.
100%. Yeah. And, like I said, I love the conversation we've had so far. I do want to focus a little bit more on your story.
Yeah.
Because life hasn't been the easiest for you. No. And you have a very positive aura, but I know that there have been periods in your life where it was more difficult than others to kind of maintain a positive mindset. So how, when you say you've had a good amount of health issues, can you explain that to us a little bit? If you don't mind, whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah, I'm an open book about it, because I definitely feel like God gives us our story and our testimony, and, you know, we should all share our story. So thank you for asking. Yes, my journey has not been easy. And it's interesting, often when people first meet me, because I do genuinely love life and I love people.
Yeah.
And, you know, first sometimes people are like, oh, there's no way somebody's like that happy, you know?
Right.
But it can also be misinterpreted as not genuine. And they're like, oh, well, here is someone that has just never had, you know, a tough time in life.
Right.
And then when they might hear about my journey, it's like, oh, wow. So yeah, I got diagnosed when I was 8 years old with type 1 diabetes, and there was no family history whatsoever. They said that a virus actually attacked my pancreas and completely shut it down. So I immediately became an insulin dependent type 1 diabetic. So I needed insulin injections to stay alive. Now, me, my mom and dad, my brother, I mean, we didn't know what this was. We'd never been exposed to this. So there was a lot of education about it.
Right.
And, you know, my perspective of life and my positivity, it really has always been there within me. And I just really do. I lean deeply on my faith, and I really do give God all the glory that he wires all of us and gives every single one of us special gifts and talents. I have never looked at my positivity as a talent, but I realize now it really is a strength that I have. But it was very natural for me. I mean, even when I got diagnosed, and when you're 8 years old, you're not really thinking about like 30, 40 years down the line. You're just thinking about like tomorrow, right? And when you hear the word chronic incurable disease as a kid, that doesn't hit you right. that this is forever.
Of course,
But it was forever. Mm-hmm. But I decided very young, even having to learn responsibility, I think at a much younger age than most, because I could not at the time, they do it very different now, but at the time I stayed hospitalized through all of my education and my training to take care of myself. They would not discharge me from the hospital till I gave my own injection. I had to give my own shot at 8 years old.
Jesus.
And yeah, because they were like, you know, you're at the age where you're going to spend the night parties. You're not always going to have your mom and dad right there. So I had to be.
How long did they keep you then?
I was in there Jeez. For 2 weeks. Yeah, they don't do that anymore. Everything is outpatient. Yeah. Healthcare has changed. But anyway, I really decided, okay, well, this is going to be something I've got to deal with every day, but hey, this is never going to slow me down, right?
Right.
And I'm so grateful for my mom and dad, because they really let me spread my wings and fly. And boy, did I try to fly. I mean, I was really into everything, anything and everything I could do. I mean, in first grade, I just decided I was going to enter a talent competition at school, and I didn't know, and just didn't even care, that it was only for the 7th and the 8th graders. years, and I did that thing, and I went home and told my mom and dad.
I have to know, what was your act?
I sang, and okay. I went to the band director who was over the talent mm-hmm. show, and I signed myself up, and she goes, what are you going to do, Jan? I said, I'm going to sing, and it was a song my grandmother had taught me, and mm-hmm. thank goodness this woman could play piano by ear, so I sat in there, and I sang it, and she played yeah. along with me, yeah. and I got a special talent award, but aww. I mean, from that day forward, if there was a poetry reading contest, I would enter that. Yeah. I eventually, like in junior high, started entering oratorical competitions. I did local theater. Of course, I was in bands and I sang at church.
You have so much confidence. Oh my goodness.
You know, I just thought, hey, I always thought somebody's got to win it, whatever you're auditioning for, whatever you're trying to shoot for. And if I work hard enough, why can't it be me?
That's true.
But I would even enter my pets into competitions. Like, I entered a little pound puppy that I had in the Purina Great American Dog Search when I was in the 7th grade. I had to send pictures of us. I had to write an essay why she was the Great American Dog. Right. We were going to win a trip to New York to ride in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Our aww. Face was going to be on Purina Dog Chow. Right. And my little dog named Honey made it to the finals.
That's really so impressive.
I know. I was in like a competition out in LA when I was in high school because I just saw the entry form and I entered.
You thought, why not?
I said, why not? Somebody's got to win it.
Would you say that you are a risk taker?
You know, I really was. I still am. I've probably, like, you know, come back a little bit on the risk.
More. What's the craziest thing you've done? How about that?
The craziest thing I've done? Well, it was probably that competition that landed me in LA. I mean, that was a kid. Because my parents, I was all about asking for forgiveness and not permission. But my parents pretty much, I think, after 1st grade, they had to wave their white flag, right? They were like, okay, this child, this disease is not going to hold her back. We can't hold her back. And all these things I did, I was managing the diabetes all along the way. Yeah. You know, pricking my finger for glucose readings, watching what I ate, giving my shots, all the things, and managing complications that can arise. But I mean, I can remember one time I was in the hospital and I was in a play and I looked at that doctor and I mean, I was really sick. And I looked at the doctor, I was like, I have a curtain call tonight at 7. Am I going to get out of here?
Or I'm leaving.
Right. And he looked at my mom and dad and then looked, you know, at me and he was like, is she serious?
And your parents are like, yes, dead serious.
Yep, that's exactly what they said. But yeah, the crazy, yeah, in high school, I just entered in Miss mm-hmm. Teenage America and it was through Teen Magazine, which is like not around anymore. Yeah. And I made it to the top 12 and they flew me out there. I was in this big spread. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of fun. But, you know, I also, like, at the time, I was like, well, I don't want to tell the judges and the editors of the magazine that I have diabetes. So right. I'll okay. just excuse myself from all the events and all the photo shoots, and I'll go give my shot and all this. Well, the really funny part was one night we were at a restaurant, all the top 12 and the editors, and I was in the bathroom giving a shot, and they were like, you know, they walked in, they were like, okay, this girl is in Miss Teenage America, and she's putting a syringe in her, you know, a needle in. I was like, it's insulin.
Right.
So, I mean, I just really was, like, I just wanted to. I've always had this, like, zest for life, but the disease, you know, in my mind, I was like, this is never going to slow me down. And those are kind of last words that people say sometimes because, like we've said, life really does happen.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of complications as a direct result of type 1 diabetes. But I will say, even my frame of mind, the way I would talk about myself, I really rarely said, I'm a type 1 diabetic. I would say I have type 1 diabetes.
Because it doesn't make you the person
that you are. Right, because I was so much more than just that diagnosis.
Yeah.
So, complications started hitting. I was in a coma for a week one time. Mm-hmm. I have severe neuropathy in my limbs. I've had major eye surgeries. I almost lost a foot one year because of an infection that spread into my bone and they don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
I've had PICC lines for months, but every single time something would hit me, I just remember thinking, okay, God, like, we got to get through this right. because I got more to do. Yeah. You know, it never entered my mind that I wouldn't come through it. And there are many times I look back now and I'm just like, now when I was in a coma, I didn't know I right. wasn't here, but, you know, my parents were just right there with me and I did come through that because there was a plan being narrated by our wonderful creator for me. Mm-hmm. And then I went through a really tough season. I actually lost my dad and mm-hmm. I mean, look, I was a daddy's girl. Mm-hmm. We were so tight, so close. I mean, I have amazing parents, but my dad passed away very quickly and suddenly to a cancer that we did not even know he had. It got diagnosed very late. They immediately put him into the hospital. It was a rare bone marrow cancer. And after that first round of chemo, I mean, he died within 5 days. Like, we were still processing that he had cancer.
Yeah.
And we lost him very quickly to that. And then right after that, I got diagnosed with some thyroid cancer myself, literally a month to the day. And I was like, I cannot even tell my mother this. I mean, we're still in such
deep grief.
Mm-hmm. We were both just in such deep grief. Went through that, came through it great. They got it. I didn't even need radiation or anything. It was a very, you know, clear cut tumor. And then I had a major eye surgery called a vitrectomy, and it was from a lot of the diabetic retinopathy that happens. And this was a very invasive surgery in my left eye. And on the tail end of that, the cherry on top was at a routine doctor's visit. The doctor looked at me and just said, "Oh no." And I was like, "What are you looking at there?"
Right.
And he said, "You are in total end-stage renal failure, and you needed a transplant yesterday." And I was like, and now keep in mind, losing my dad, thyroid cancer, major eye surgery, and now renal failure. That was all within about an 8-month period.
Oh my goodness.
And I just remember that news about the renal failure. I mean, here goes my positivity. I was listening. I was in shock. You know, and he could tell I was in shock. Mm-hmm. He even, like, got out a piece of paper because he was like, "You have fallen off a cliff with your kidney function." Because, you know, they check that with diabetes.
Yeah.
And I had not been at 100% for a long while, but I was fine. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it just plummeted. He got out a piece of paper and drew a rock and it falling off a cliff. like I need you to understand what I'm saying. And, you know,
because your positive brain wanted to be like,
I was like,
"You're lying. There's no way this going to be." Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll be honest. This is where my positive brain went. He was talking about, you know, dialysis, and he was talking about mapping my veins and, you know, nephrologists and all this stuff. And I was just listening, and I got to my car and I was like, "Oh, I know what happened. They messed up. It's Jan Jones. Like, it's such a common name.
Oh, no.
The lab has another Jones that is supposed to get this news."
Your brain was in full protection mode. It's like,
I was
we will
in
not
total,
go down.
Yeah, I was like, "Oh, this isn't happening. This isn't happening." It was really denial.
Yeah.
But it was happening. And so my world got turned upside down again from another major health diagnosis. And so that was a really, really tough time. But, you know, I can remember at some point thinking while I was going through evaluations at different hospitals, because, I mean, every nephrologist was like, "You don't have much time. Like, we need to get you multiple listed because you have to wait for these organs. And just because you need one doesn't mean that you're a good candidate for one."
Mm-hmm.
And so there were so many unknowns and just a lot of fear, a lot of just what's happening here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I remember at one point I thought, "Man, there must be some big plans for me because the enemy is trying to keep me down," you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I said it earlier, but I do really lean on my faith a lot, but I also lean on my support people in my life. I mean, just because people are really positive and I do have that glass half full approach, that does not mean scary things aren't happening.
Yeah.
And I had to be very realistic. I mean, I was literally facing my own mortality, like, square in the eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know that, you know, our time is fleeting, but I felt like, okay, mine might be cut short.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, I was like, okay, one of two things is going to happen. Like, I'm not going to go down without a fight because I am a fighter, and I'm going to just, like, walk the line with every single healthcare provider and what they tell me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they really, by the grace of God and their expertise, kept me alive while I was waiting on this transplant list. But I thought, I am either going to leave this earth and I will be reunited with my dad and my grandparents and like the people in my life that have been so close and important to me that had passed on. I was like, okay, I'm either going to see them in heaven or I'm going to have a miracle and I'm going to be here.
I mean, I've heard your story two times now, just complete honesty to the listeners, which is, again, listening to it the second time, it's like, it's so hard for my brain to wrap around the idea of you being able to, what it seems like, so easily be able to maintain like a positive outlook. Like, no matter what you were going through, you found a way to be like, okay, this, you know, has these things that are scary, has these things that are going to be hard. But you always had a but, like you always put a but and then you put something sunshiny. And like, I struggle with being able to do that.
Yeah.
Like there are times where like, I do let my negativity get the best of me. I will be the first to admit it. And it affects me. It affects people around me. It affects my performance and how, or even how I am that day towards others or other relationships that I may have with friends and family.
Oh yeah.
So like, what is the secret? Like, how do you do that? Like, seriously, this is a genuine question.
You're so sweet. Okay, so look, I had days and times where the positivity was definitely shadowed,
mm-hmm.
right? But I love how you put it. I never even thought about that I did always have a but.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, the first word after that but is but God. But God is going to protect me. But God has a plan. You know, but God knows exactly what he's doing. And so one of the things I really learned to do, because look, you heard me as a kid, like I was going to figure out a way to get it done. Like if there was something I wanted to do, my mother always said, you were so resourceful. Like if
people can't see you right now, but the shoulder shrug motions going on. Right.
Like, I mean, if I wanted to do something, I was going to figure out a way to do it.
Yeah.
And there was no figuring out a way for this. So I had to surrender, you know, I had to surrender to God's will. I had to wholeheartedly trust, you know, I had to trust my healthcare providers. I had to trust that the right people were in my life at just the right time. And I've got stories that prove that. And I'll share one in just a minute. But really, I think about my life, and even now, because look, life is still hard. I mean, there's things going on now that my husband Jim and I are dealing with, and we're navigating like some new territory.
Yeah.
But I do think, okay, there's like three W's that come to my mind often.
Okay.
And one of them is, what am I telling myself?
You know, that's such a big one.
What am I telling myself? Is this negative self-talk overshadowing?
See, now you're getting into my field.
Reality.
I like this. Keep it going.
So, like, that first thing is like, okay, what am I telling myself? And, you know, human nature is we can easily go negative.
Very easily.
And I heard someone say one time that you got to get rid of the ants in your head, those automatic negative thoughts. I mean, they're running around all the time and you got to get rid of them. So what am I telling myself? Because, you know, when you were asking about mental health, to me, it's the right perspective. Yeah, you want it to be positive. We have to be realistic, but, you know, we want it to be positive. So what am I telling myself?
who am I surrounding myself with?
Mm.
You know, like, who is in my life that is lifting me up rather than feeding into negativity? Because not everyone has a positive outlook, and they like to call it, I'm being realistic, and they may be, but, you know, we have to limit our exposure to negative people. Yeah.
I don't want to interrupt you because I do want you to keep going, but
yeah,
one small thing. You just said being realistic when people use that. Okay. Yeah. So I have something for that.
Okay.
People will be realistic, but what becomes reality is still what you're telling yourself. Yeah. So to you, what you're telling yourself is realistic. What people don't realize is their version of realistic may not actually be as realistic as they think, right? Yeah. Because when bad things happen, it is so easy to be like, oh, since this has happened, for sure, this has got to happen,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
My dog just got hit by a car, so for sure, my cat's next.
Yeah.
And that's a really dark example. But, but seriously, that's how people think.
We go to worst case scenario.
Yeah. So sometimes if we take a step back and be like, okay, what am I convincing myself that realistic is? Or what is my brain, what has my brain established as reality?
Yeah.
And is that actually it?
Is that factual?
And then you talked about having the support system, having other people who can be like, listen, Jan.
Yeah.
The rock is falling.
Yeah.
We got,
yeah.
Right? Like, just like your doctor did.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you needed somebody else to literally give your brain the ability to understand that the reality that you had built for yourself, it had broken pieces. It wasn't the full story.
Yeah.
Sorry. Continue.
Yeah.
Just
no, I love that because, it made me think about something when you were talking about the reality, because you're right. We do tend to go to worst case scenario.
Oh, yeah.
But we have to separate the facts out from how we feel about the facts, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's true.
And so oftentimes we are convincing ourselves that the way we feel about those facts is the reality.
Yep.
But we've got to stick with the facts. And, you know, information is power, and it helps us make our plan. I do like to make a plan. And so I'm going to make a plan as much as I can. So, you know, these questions, these three W's are, you know, what am I telling myself? Who am I surrounding myself with? But the last one to me is like one of the most important things that is a tactic I have used most of my life, but especially as I've gotten older. Why am I grateful?
Mm.
Why am I grateful?
Practice of gratitude.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, in your business, and there is just something incredibly powerful about gratitude. And I will say this. This is just what I think.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot be sad and grateful at the same time. You cannot be scared and grateful at the same time. You cannot be frustrated, angry, depressed, and grateful at the same time. And I'm telling you, when I get sad or worried or concerned, I'm not saying those things go away, but it can snap you a little bit back into a fresher perspective when you just sit there for a minute and you just think, I'm grateful for the home I live in. I'm grateful for my pets. I'm grateful for my spouse.
Yeah.
Just anything. I'm grateful I have electricity.
Yeah.
Like I'm serious. I have literally, if something negative is coming into my brain, I go straight to gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And even during all of the renal failure and the evaluations and the pain and the illness, I was getting so sick. Like when your kidneys shut down, it affects your heart, it affects your blood, it affects your, I mean, everything. And you said it earlier, you can't have a running car if one piece isn't working.
100%.
Our bodies are like that too.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
So I go straight to gratitude. But, you know, during all of these really tough times, my instinct is to be positive, but I have to ask myself, what am I telling myself?
Yeah.
Who's with me? And why am I grateful?
I love that. That is so key. And you've mentioned now two things. And I wanted to come back to your perspective on like those two things cannot simultaneously happen, like sadness and gratitude. And then you mentioned like it doesn't mean it goes away.
Yeah.
So I think the connection there as a therapist.
Yeah, that's just me non-clear.
Right.
I like to clarify that with you.
No, and I think like Because that's you. You are being very raw when you're explaining that this is just how you made it through. And then, yeah. I mean, then that's right. As simple as that, right? Like, your experience is your experience.
Yeah.
I will say, as a therapist from the outside, combining those two statements into one, I remember at the beginning during my intro, I said, we have a responsibility to try to ensure that we allow space for positivity, right? It doesn't necessarily take over. So like when we have things that happen to us that are really tough, really sad, really depressing, really scary, management, that is one of my favorite words as a therapist, right?
Yes.
Because we don't, it's not replacing. Kind of like you said, it's like during those moments, you being grateful for being able to wake up the next day didn't fix all of the health issues you were having, right?
Right.
So all of those things still exist, but you took a very small moment, a very small moment. It would be a very long journey to just pause and do that one little thing for your own mental health.
Yeah.
And that allowed for you to be able to carry on when the fear came back.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I think what we don't realize is that a lot of things can be happening at once. But when it comes to mental health, what we allow to come first and what we allow to happen in the background can make a huge difference.
Yeah.
So if you are grieving, right?
Yeah.
That is going to be the forefront.
Yeah.
Can you find a moment in time during your grieving process to just one little thing, one little moment? And it is so, it's so much easier said than done.
It
you know,
is.
I'm not going to sit here and pretend that that is something simple to learn how to do or simple to do in the moment.
But it's all about, for me, and especially like, you know, talking about this with you and hopefully like listeners are really taking this to heart. I mean, baby steps, like don't overwhelm yourself, you know, just think, oh yeah, what did SB say on that show? And that crazy guest, Jan, you know, what was she think? What were those three W's?
We said we're doing positive self-talk.
Yeah.
Okay?
But crazy to me is fun. Like, you know, crazy, like kooky, fun, like out of the box, you know, that's my version of crazy. But, you know, and I'm just being silly, but, you know, we do have to find the silly moments, you know, because, I mean, the grieving, I mean, when my dad passed, my world was rocked.
Yeah.
Because he was my rock. And then it was gone. And it was shortly after that, all these things started happening, and then the renal failure. And one of my first thoughts, other than they made a mistake, was, how am I going to do this without my dad? Because I had not met Jim yet, you know, and, you know, we have incredible friends and in church and all of that. But at the end of the day, it was really going to be me and Mom.
Yeah.
And I can say now, looking back, again, part of God's plan, because guess what it did? It distracted us from grief because then we were in survival mode for me and planning, you know,
that became the forefront.
Yeah, it became the forefront. And I guess I should finish that story because after I got that news, I was in renal failure and things were getting, you know, dimmer and dimmer every day. And I was just waiting. And that could be another whole podcast, just the whole waiting. But I did eventually get the call and they had the match. And I became a double organ transplant recipient that day, not just a kidney that absolutely saved my life, but I also received a pancreas, SB. And so I have a pancreas that now produces insulin, which means like we're sitting here having this conversation and I don't have type 1 diabetes anymore as long as this pancreas continues to function. Like I am no longer attached to an insulin pump.
Yeah.
I can eat like cake and candy and cookies and all the alphabet of all the sweets, you know. And I don't have to feel like a human pincushion anymore, like pricking my fingers, getting glucose readings. Like it's been a just true miracle healing. And it was such a journey of really growth for me. It was a journey of growth in my faith, growth in trust, growth in surrender, growth in like, okay, I'm not in control of this life, really.
Yeah.
And so It was incredible. And I'm just grateful. I mean, look, I have always been a very grateful person, but my gratitude is like off the charts. And I remember praying like during this very long recovery, because it was a very long recovery.
Yeah.
I mean, I had close to 100 staples, like up and down my body, in my abdomen, like, you know, pretty much the length of my torso. I was in so much pain. It was a long, tough recovery, but it was worth every minute of it. And I remember at one point, just, you know, you're just praying in gratitude. You're praying in awe. You just can't believe this has happened. And I just remember saying, let me always remember this feeling, because one day I'm going to be recovered. I'm going to be working again. I'm going to have stress. I'm going to get like frustrated. I'm going to be this or that. And I want to always come back to center with this feeling of, I am so glad to be alive. And so, yeah, that there's that happy ending there of a really tough journey.
In other words, Jan is alive. She is here today. This is not a ghost.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a figment of your imagination.
But yeah, just to summarize, basically self-talk and gratitude. Yeah. That's what's gotten you through
a lot of things. And support.
And yeah, support, and then your faith, of course.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, your story has got so many just pieces to it that, again, is like each piece could be its own podcast interview on how the heck you got through it.
Well, and as you're seeing, I could probably fill up lots of podcasts because I am a talker.
that too. But everything that you say has been, I mean, it's not like you're just talking about things that are fluffy. Like this is real stuff. And, you know, there's so many people out there that deal with health issues have restrictions because of their health.
Yeah.
That's not new news. Mm-hmm. It's something that a lot of people deal with. So I think being able to hear how you've made it through some of the challenges that your health has brought, I mean, that's going to be a game changer for some people.
Well, I hope so. Like that's always my desire for others. And if I have, you know, these just great opportunities like you've given me, just to talk about it and share about it and to let people know, and this is a big, big takeaway I have learned in life.
Yeah.
I can do hard things.
Yeah.
And we can. And, you know, we don't have to do them alone. And so if people can just know that, you know, you are beautifully, wonderfully, fearfully made, and there's a plan, and, you know, spend this time while you're here and contribute and engage.
Yeah.
It'll make a big difference.
I love that. As we get closer to the end, I do have to say something.
Yeah.
For Jim. This is specifically for Jim, so make sure he listens. You need to write a book, woman.
Oh, no, I need to.
You need to do it. Seriously. You need to put this all in a book. I know you've got your podcast and you've got a handful of other things, but
no, but I'm so okay. Like, I just took that message like deeply to heart, because I have been feeling that, I've been hearing that, and I'm gonna make some accountability here. I'm gonna do it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do it.
You need to do it. Seriously, like I said, yeah, it's your story is powerful. It's full of just powerful messages. So, and thank you. I'm really honored to be able to, you know your story and know you and everything that you've been through, how you've gone through it. And I'm really grateful that, you know, speaking of gratitude, I'm really grateful that you were willing to hop on and kind of share your story with my listeners.
I'm honored.
Yeah, I mean, I alone took so much out of, again, every time I have an encounter with you, a conversation, like I just feel fulfilled. So seriously, thank you. Before I let you go for the day, if I did want to listen to your podcast, where can I find it?
Well, it is called The Good, Good Life with Jan Jones. You can find it on any podcast platform. The original platform is on Voice America, the Empowerment Channel.
Okay.
And it is live every Friday at 12 Central, but it is distributed to any podcast platform. So just look for The Good, Good Life with Jan Jones.
Perfect. And as far as like if I wanted any services from you in regards to your business, what's the best way to contact you with that?
Yeah. My website is jjmotivate.com.
Of course it is.
But you can also email me at jan@jjmotivate.com.
Okay, perfect. And I just wanted, you know, to make sure that everybody had access to those resources in case they wanted to follow up with you on anything. But thank you again. Aww. Seriously, I appreciate you. And I very much enjoyed having you on. It was different having another podcaster on my podcast.
I know.
It's like you already knew all the cues and everything. I felt like I couldn't hide no secrets behind my little laptop.
I've got to plug my podcast, though, because Espy's going to be on an episode of mine coming up.
That's true. So I'll
you'll
be
have
on.
To look for me.
When will I be on?
You will be on next Friday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody go listen to me.
Come and listen.
But, and to my listeners, thank you for spending some time with me today as we entangled ourselves in the mental world of Jan Jones and positivity. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to share and subscribe. Catch the next episode next Friday. And as always, our goal is to spread awareness on the importance of mental health as it relates to every person. No matter who you are or what you do, there is not a single person that goes unaffected by mental health. Don't forget, you are mentally entangled in every single aspect of your life. See you next time.